This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Yes, Amanda and I had quite a complicated exam question, didn't we? Lots of streams to bring together, so yep. Bear with us on this one. I'd like to introduce myself briefly, just and the Centre for Social and Economic Inclusion, known as Inclusion, just to give you a bit of context for my response. CESI Inclusion is the UK's leading not-for-profit company dedicated to tackling disadvantage and promoting social justice. Our key areas are social policy expertise around welfare to work, as you'd expect, learning and skills, regeneration, homelessness, criminal justice and social exclusion. We work with the government, the public sector, interest groups and business to develop policy, strategy and to implement ideas. Most fundamentally, we pride ourselves on our thought leadership, our advocacy and being an honest broker between interest groups working within welfare reform. So, you know, bear with me on the rather broad brush approach I might have taken to this. It's intended to stimulate discussion. I'm personally something of a poacher turned gamekeeper, as those of you who do know me know, because I've worked in the private, the public and the voluntary sector. I've worked as an employer, I've been unemployed and I've been made redundant, so I feel I've seen something from things from most angles. I was also, until relatively recently, chair of IRSA. And during that time, whilst I was chair of IRSA, I became very deeply involved with the department in the consultation around the commissioning strategy. And I became particularly aware of the ramifications for smaller and niche providers as the prime contract commissioning model began to roll out in earnest. And what was clear right from the start that was of fundamental importance was the creation of transparent lines of accountability, both between commissioners and the organisations with which they directly contracted, but also between the primes and their subcontractors. IRSA, I'm very proud to say, led the way with its own code of business conduct, and DWP followed with its code of conduct and the Merlin standard. This, for those of you who may not know, is the standard which is currently in pilot form against which prime contractors in Flexible New Deal Round 1 are beginning to be assessed in the next few weeks. In essence, Merlin's about the behaviours that are appropriate within the contracting relationship between the Commissioner, DWP, and the prime contractor, and between the prime and their supply chain. It's about transparency in terms of understanding the cause and effect that relationships have between what organisations do and what they actually achieve. DWP acknowledges that supply chain behaviour is impacted by the behaviour of the Commissioner, specifically those behaviours resulting from contract design and procurement activity. And it's not surprising to hear that other government departments are watching the progress of Merlin with considerable interest as a potential model for the way they work with their own prime contractors. So I would recommend that you keep an eye on that. What we have to ensure now is that, in my opinion, is that the spotlight is firmly on those other fundamentally important interagency collaborations. And I hear entirely what Stella's saying, and I applaud the collaboration that's obviously gone on there. But I think we have to take a reality pill in the economic times that we find ourselves in. It would be nice to imagine that when cash is short, agencies put a greater effort into their collaborations. But the tendency can be that instead agencies just shout louder for limited resources, and that's entirely understandable. We have to maximise the bang that we get for our limited bucks, and that means that duplication of resources across government departments have to be minimised. And I can think particularly of the most recent example of a rapid response programme from the DWP and a response to redundancy programme from the LSC. A little bit of forethought in advance might have helped ease a few frustrations and a lot of cash in that area. We have also to recognise the extent of duplication between local and national programmes and to eradicate those, as I say, to get the biggest bang that we possibly can for limited bucks. I want to come to the customer experience now and how best to meet their expectations. I think it's extremely tricky to raise the bar when we're not at all clear what the benchmark is and when it's not clear at all what the expectations are that customers have of their experience. The IRSA shared promise on customer care and the DWP customer charter are timely and very much to be welcomed. They correctly emphasise the necessity for the right treatment, the right result, the best use of the customer's time and easy access. What is less clear is what happens next, and I think that's really, really fundamentally important. It's beholden on DWP and the provider community to ensure that just as the commissioning strategy's code of conduct has teeth in the Merlin standard, so the customer charter has real guts too. In the UK, Job Centre Plus has the responsibility for the customer journey, and it's Job Centre Plus to whom the customer should turn if they have a complaint. Where resolution cannot be reached, and I defer now to a recent select committee that was told this, recent select committee evidence, customers can go to the Ombudsman via their MP or the Independent Case Examiner in DWP. I doubt very much if this is widely known. I certainly didn't know it, and I spend quite a lot of time investigating these kinds of things, and I doubt it's known by customers. I prefer myself something akin to the Australian approach, where a customer has the ability to contract DUA, that's the DWP equivalent. More interestingly, the Australians are using a post-programme monitoring survey to collect data on whether their charter undertaking, that's what they call their guarantee, was delivered. And the results will be used to assess provider performance as part of the quality performance indicator. Failure to reach the KPI would adversely affect the star rating, which in turn affects the provider's competitive edge, this is in Australia, and future tendering rounds, and can lead to contracts being taken away mid-term, and that is what happens in Australia. There's good practice too in the US system, where in many contracted out federal programs, agencies must conduct customer satisfaction surveys, and the results may, as in the Wisconsin example, be used as a benchmark performance indicator. These instruments are important because they provide important information on service delivery and because they can militate against creaming, where job-focused performance benchmarks might encourage contractors to deliver most to those who are easiest to place. Lastly, in order to tie up the exam question, I would like to talk about parking and to ask us to think very carefully as a group, and this is a bit of a challenge to you, I think, about what we mean by this in the current economic environment. Unfortunately, we have to, again, take a reality pill. We can expect unemployment to rise and budgets for welfare to work programmes to fall. So it's a bit of a no-brainer to recognise that some very hard decisions will have to be made, not so much about who might be parked, but rather who must be prioritised. Clearly, we have a duty to our 1 million unemployed young people, shamefully 304,000 the other day, long-term unemployed, 6 months plus. We have a duty to our 1 million unemployed young people, both for demographic reasons and for very, very sound financial reasons, because the UK simply cannot sustain a generation written off for life. We have to get those young people back into work. We have to get them learning, training, earning, and ultimately paying taxes for 40 plus years. So I'm going to leave you rather cheekily with a question, which I think is a big and timely one, which is if we do prioritise those priority groups, and I'm recommending that those priority groups are the young at this time, what can we feasibly do for those we cannot prioritise right now? Because patently, obviously, we can't just leave them parked.